From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen our broadcast and online streaming, voanews.id.
Hello listener, how are you today? I hope you are fine and I will accompany you with 60 minutes ahead for today's edition. And would like to present some programs started with news, commentary and other soft information as well as entertainment and Indonesian pop song. Listener, we begin our program with news. So stay with us on Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vianews.id.
Here is the news first, the headlines. Government plans to ease social restrictions in some regions. Health protocol key to preventing second COVID-19 wave, task force said. Now the news in details. Coordinating Minister for Maritime Affairs and Investment Luhut Binsar Panjaitan is mulling a plan to ease social restrictions in several regions which have begun to see a downward trend in COVID-19 infection. During the handing over of the health facility assistance from Bank DBS in Jakarta on Thursday, Minister Luhut said, the curve of COVID-19 cases in several areas has begun to flatten. As quoted by Antara, he said social restrictions in some regions such as Bali, Manado, Yogyakarta, Batam, and Bintan may be eased to boost their economy. He said the plan would also deepen on the trend in COVID-19 cases in the next 2 weeks. Minister Luhut also believed coronavirus cases in Indonesia will soon decline since the task force have begun to work more effectively. Government spokesperson for COVID handling, Ahmad Yuryanto, said earlier in the day that 231 more COVID-19 patients have recovered in Indonesia, taking the total count of recoveries to 3,518 out of 16,000 people testing positive for the virus. The Government Task Force for COVID-19 Handling has reiterated that discipline in applying health protocols would be a key to preventing a second wave of coronavirus transmission in Indonesia. The head of the expert team of the Task Force for the Acceleration of COVID-19 Handling, Wiku Adhisa Smito, said during a virtual press conference on Thursday in Jakarta that there is a chance of a second wave of COVID-19 transmission if the public does not adhere to the government's protocol. Self-discipline to follow a healthy lifestyle is the recommendation to avoid a second wave. Such discipline must be maintained by all people, not just those living in COVID-19 red zones. The task force has prepared necessary measures in anticipation of a second wave of COVID-19 transmission. However, active public participation is needed to stem the spread of the virus. The health protocols include staying at home, except for emergency reasons, washing hands with soap, wearing masks when venturing outdoors, and maintaining physical distance from others. The Indonesian Embassy in Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, distributed 80 relief packages to Indonesian nationals in the second phase of an aid program to assist those affected by the impact of the new coronavirus pandemic. The aid packages containing several items of staple food, including rice, cooking oil, canned food, biscuit, and instant noodles, were distributed on May 12 to 13. The Indonesian Embassy in Canberra said in a statement on Thursday, the first phase of the relief program was conducted from April 16 to April 22. The aid program is aimed at helping Indonesians stay strong in the face of an uncertain future, amid the Australian government imposition of social restrictions to contain the spread of COVID-19. The imposition of the social restriction had led to shutting of schools, restaurants, cafes, fitness centers, and many other public facilities in Australia. The situation has also affected the lives of community members, including those working in the service sector. Those who have lost their jobs are trying to survive by relying on their savings or an assistance from their colleagues and families. This news comes to you from Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. As many as 95 Indonesian citizens affected by lockdown in the Philippines prompted by coronavirus spread left Manila for Jakarta on Thursday of an AirAsia chartered flight. The repatriations was initiated by the 95 Indonesian themselves and the Indonesian embassy in Manila assisted them. In completing the formalities, the embassy said in a press statement as quoted by Antara. The chartered aircraft left Manila at 2:25 p.m. local time. The Indonesian nationals were affected by the Philippines government's lockdown policy and were keen to return home, but they faced problems due to the absence of regular flights from Manila to Jakarta. The Indonesian embassy in Manila stepped in to assist their repatriation by involving the Indonesian diaspora network in the Philippine capital. All the returnees were in good health and had obtained health certificates from the Philippines authority. The AirAsia aircraft that carried the 95 Indonesians back home on Thursday had previously flown 22 Philippine citizens from Jakarta to their country. U.S. President Donald Trump signaled a further deterioration of his relationship with China over the novel coronavirus, saying he has no interest in speaking to President Xi Jinping right now and going so far as to suggest he could even cut ties with the world's second largest economy. In an interview with Fox Business Network broadcast on Thursday, May 14, Trump said he was very disappointed with China's failure to contain the disease and that the pandemic had cast a pall over his January trade deal with Beijing, which he has previously hailed a major achievement. They should have never let this happen. Trump speaks extended to Xi, with whom the U.S. president has said repeatedly he has a good relationship. Trump and his Republican backers have accused Beijing of failing to alert the world to the severity and scope of the coronavirus outbreak, which has sparked a sharp global recession and threatened his November re-election chances. China insists it has been transparent, and amid increasingly bitter exchanges, both sides have questioned the future of the trade deal. Two Rohingya refugees have tested positive for coronavirus in the world's largest refugee camp in Bangladesh. They are the first confirmed cases among refugees in Cox Bazar, where around 1 million Rohingyas are in camp, a government doctor said. Officials told the BBC that those infected were now being treated in isolation. About 1,900 other refugees are now being isolated for tests. The Rohingya in the crowded camps of Cox's Bazar have been living under lockdown since 14 of March. In Greece, which is also home to large numbers of refugees, officials are hoping to relocate around 1,600 vulnerable persons from its camps to other countries as the pandemic eases. Two migrants who reached Greece's Lesbos Islands this week tested positive for COVID-19 and were isolated with no contact with refugee camps on the island. Japan has lifted a state of emergency imposed due to the coronavirus in 39 out of 47 prefectures after a sharp fall in a new infection. The order still applies in Tokyo, Osaka, and on the northern island of Hokkaido, where new cases are emerging daily. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said Japan's rate of infections had reduced to 1/7 of the country's peak. He urged the public to be vigilant, wear masks, and keep following distancing guidance. If possible before May 31st, they would like to lift the state of emergency for the other regions as well. Unlike governments elsewhere, Japan's leaders have no legal power to enforce a lockdown. While local governors can call on businesses to stay closed and suggest people stay at home, there are no punishments if they choose not to do so. Despite this, mobility data has shown a striking drop in public movement. Listener, that was the news. I'm Nico Kusumawati. Thank you for listening. Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta with news analysis today, entitling Global Virus Vaccine Race Heat Ups, with more spats and controversy. global tensions simmered over the race for a coronavirus vaccine on Thursday, as the United States and China traded jabs, and France slammed pharmaceutical giant Sanofi for suggesting the US would get any eventual vaccine first. Scientists are working at a breakneck speed to develop a vaccine for COVID-19, which has killed more than 300,000 people worldwide and pummeled economies. From the US to Europe to Asia, national and local governments are easing up on lockdown orders to get people back to work, while freeing over a possible second wave of infection. Increased freedom of movement means an increased risk of contracting the virus. The European Union Medicines Agency offered some hope when it said one could be ready in a year, based on data from clinical trials already underway. The race for a vaccine has exposed a raw nerve in relations between the United States and China. Two US agencies warned on Wednesday that Chinese hackers were trying to steal COVID-19 vaccine research, a claim Beijing rejected as smearing its reputation. On Capitol Hill, announced state's U.S. health officials told Congress that the Trump government had no strategies in place to find and distribute a vaccine to millions of Americans, warning of the darkest winter ahead. They don't have a single point of leadership right now for this response, and they don't also have a master plan, said Rick Bright, who was removed last month as head of the U.S. agency charged with developing of a coronavirus vaccine. In the meantime, world leaders were among 140 signatories to a letter published Thursday, saying any vaccine should not be patented and that the science should be shared among nations. But a row erupted in France after drug maker Sanofi said it would reserve first shipments of any vaccine it discovered to the United States. The comments prompted a swift rebuke from the French government. President Emmanuel Macron often said any vaccine should be treated as a global public good, which is not submitted to market forces. Sanofi chief executive Paul Hudson said the US had a risk-sharing model that allowed for manufacturing to start before a vaccine had been finally approved, while Europe did not. The search for a vaccine became even more urgent after the World Health Organization said the disease may never go away and the world would have to learn to live with it for good. Meanwhile, the reopening of economies continued in earnest across Europe, where the European Union has sent out proposals for a phased restart of travel and the eventual lifting of border controls. And Japan, the world's third largest economy, lifted a state of emergency across most of the countries except for Tokyo and Osaka. New Zealanders mingled with friends and hit the shopping malls for the first time in 7 weeks as the national lockdown ended. That was News Analysis. I'm Nuka Kusumawati.
Several countries hit by the COVID-19 pandemic with certain considerations decided to relax the lockdown policy. The agricultural and industrial sectors are starting to be revived, but several other sectors are still not open freely. Although a number of new corona cases are still found, lockdown easing steps have been taken. Like Russian President Vladimir Putin, who loosened the lockdown in his country on Tuesday, May 12, 2020. The move was taken even though Russia is still experiencing a sharp increase in the COVID-19 case. According to Putin, as quoted by a number of media, all the actions related to COVID-19 that Russia had taken enabled the country to move to the next step in combating the epidemic, that is, by starting the lockdown easing gradually. The British government also decided to do the same thing and began loosening the lockdown that has been carried out for the past 7 weeks. Starting Sunday, on May 10th, people who could not work from home, such as in the field of construction, can work again. Meanwhile, recovery rate for coronavirus in Malaysia reportedly reached more than 60%. This has made the Malaysian government decide to loosen lockdown. Malaysian Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin said in early May that the majority of the business sector would be allowed to operate again while continuing to set strict health protocol. Meanwhile, in the last few days, US President Trump has encouraged the states to begin loosening their lockdowns to stimulate economic activity in America that has plummeted since the coronavirus struck. But the US government's epidemic expert and medical advisor, Anthony Fauci, said the easing of lockdown would actually lead America to a worse situation with even more lives. For the sake of maintaining domestic economic conditions, loosening lockdowns has become the main choice of these countries. However, the consequences and risks are quite expensive, namely the possibility of increasing the number of infected COVID-19. Not an easy choice indeed, but steps and decisions must be taken to be free from the economic impact of the pandemic, which cannot be ascertained when it is over. All that's left is for the health protocol to be carried out with discipline and easing lockdown for economic recovery effort, so that it will not actually cause a spike in the distribution of COVID-19 cases. And listener, that was commentary.
Do the following to avoid virus infection when you are traveling. Keep your distance. If you see someone unhealthy, please maintain your distance. The minimum safe distance is 1 meter, but if the person is coughing, then the minimum distance is around 3 meters. Wash your hands with soap, especially if you keep interacting with other people. You can also use alcohol-based sanitizer to kill the germs. Cover your mouth and nose with your elbow or tissue when you are coughing or sneezing. If you are using tissue, throw it away immediately and then wash your hands. Avoid direct contact with living animals and any surfaces that had contacted with animals. Avoid consuming raw or half-cooked meat to avoid cross-contamination. Find medical treatment as soon as possible and then share your prior travel history with the health services if you are experiencing any health problems. From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program.
Welcome back to Today in History. I begin with a history on May 15. It's celebrated as the day of Korps Mahajaya Regiment. Commander of Military Region 5, Greater Jakarta, Colonel Umar Wirahadi Kusuma, as ruler of the Greater Jakarta area and surrounding areas, issued a decree number 062 of 1962 on ratification of the establishment of the Mahajaya Regiment on May 15, 1962. The inauguration of the regiment was carried out by the Army Chief of Staff, General Abdul Haris Nasution, on May 20, 1962. Mahajaya Regiment, which means the Student Regiment of Greater Jakarta and its surroundings, or known as MENWA, was one of a number of civilian forces to defend the country. MENWA was born in colleges as a manifestation of the Universal People's Defense and security system. The manual consists of students who are concerning to defend the country. Next, we turn to a history occurred on May 15, 1972. Okinawa officially returns to Japan. Until the Japanese regained their sovereignty from the Allies in 1952, Okinawa remained under American occupation. America is trying to become the sole ruler of Okinawa. With the development of Japan's economy and politics, finally, the Okinawa issue became the main topic of discussion between the two leaders. In November 1987, Japanese Prime Minister Sato Eisaku and U.S. President Lyndon B. Johnson agreed to return Okinawa for a period of 3 years. And on May 15, 1972, Okinawa officially returned to Japan. We end with a story on May 15, 2010, Jessica Watson ended her world tour. Jessica Watson, who was born in Budarim, north of Brisbane, Queensland, sailed away from Sydney on October 18, 2009. The 17-year-old sails across the South Pacific to Cape Horn in South America, then sails the Atlantic Ocean to South Africa. He crossed the Indian Ocean and sailed southern Australia. After 7 months of sailing the ocean, Jessica Watson finally completed her world tour on May 15, 2010. Jessica Watson became the youngest person who sailed endlessly alone around the world. That was Today in History.
Welcome, listener. You've listened to the song and you are still with us on Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vnews.id. In today's edition, I'd like to give you another segment, My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Welcome back to My Indonesia. Today's My Indonesia title: Indonesian government prepares COVID-19 post-epidemic recovery program. Indonesian Vice President Ma'ruf Amin said the government has prepared a number of development programs for recovery after the COVID-19 pandemic. Thereby, the government has to change the focus of development in 2020. Vice President Ma'ruf Amin, in his statement in Jakarta on Monday, May 11, said the government will emphasize the economic sector as the sector most affected in the long term by the COVID-19 pandemic. Ma'ruf Amin, when giving a speech from Ramadan online to the Indonesian Student Association, said there would be pressure on sectors that greatly affected by this pandemic, for example, the economic sector, including business groups, both large and medium enterprises and small micro enterprises. In addition, the poor will also receive the attention of the government related to the COVID-19 pandemic. There has increasing number of poor people, which is predicted to reach 40%. The Vice President added, the government has to conduct effort to fulfill their livelihoods and re-empowerment to reduce the number of poor communities in Indonesia. Earlier, Minister of Finance Sri Mulyani Indrawati also said that the government would immediately realize the National Economic Recovery Program in response to the government's reaction to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the economy. The Ministry of Finance, in Article 11 of the Government Regulation in Lieu of Law Perpu No. 1 of 2020 concerning state financial policy and financial system stability for handling COVID-19 pandemic, Minister Sri Mulyani explained, the National Economic Recovery Program is the focus of the government to safeguard the business world, which is currently down. Especially for micro, small and medium enterprises, who really felt the impact of the decline in economic activity due to the large-scale social restrictions, PSBB. The focus is the need for working capital. Currently, the government is still reviewing the amount of working capital necessity for the continuity of micro, small and medium enterprises. Listener, that was My Indonesia.
Tiada kata yang dapat ku ucap saat kau pergi. Ku hanya diam menatap langkahmu meninggalkan kita. Karena ku tahu pasti ada tantangan yang berat di setiap perjalanan yang hebat. Takkan berakhir di sini, semuanya akan jadi lebih baik. Walau kita tidak lagi berlari bersama lagi, tetapi doaku ini selalu untukmu. Sampai suatu hari nanti kita akan bersama lagi, berbagi
langkahmu meninggalkan kita. Pasti ada tantangan yang berat di setiap perjalanan yang hebat. Takkan berakhir di sini, semuanya akan jadi lebih baik.
Walau kita tidak lagi berlari bersama lagi, tetap doaku ini selalu untukmu. Sampai suatu hari nanti kita akan bersama lagi, berbagi
dan berbagi
cerita terbaik. Walau kita tidak lagi bersama lagi, berbagi cerita terbaik dari hidup ini. Cerita terbaik dari
You are still with us, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vianews.id. Listener, then we would like to present next segment, Indonesia Wonder, about tourism and local wisdom of Indonesian people.
Welcome back to Indonesian Wonder. For today's edition, I would like to introduce you Haji Abdul Ghani Mosque in Buru Island. Listener, Haji Abdul Ghani Mosque is the oldest mosque in Buru Island, Karimun Regency, Riau Islands Province. It was built by King Abdul Ghani bin King Idris bin Haji Fisabilillah, the first leader of Buru Island in the mid-19th century. Because it was built by Raja Abdul Ghani, so the mosque was also named Haji Abdul Ghani Mosque. But many people also called the mosque as the Buru Mosque, because it was located in the island of Buru and close to the port of Buru Island, about 100 meters. Haji Abdul Ghani Mosque has main room of 8 by 15 meters and a dome which is supported by four poles of 5 meter high. Perhaps the mosque was built by Chinese architect. Previously, the architect built a temple that is not far from the mosque. The Chinese influence can be seen from the existence of conical towers. At glance, it is similar to incense combustion rooms in the temple. The ventilation holes are also made of blue jade carved with a Chinese typical coffin. Listener, Buru Mosque has ever been renovated on part of the roof and terrace. Besides, the originality of the mosque is intentionally maintained. There is no significant renovation outside the two components, including the existence of perigi or well to take up lotion of water. Perigi, which has four stairs, is still used and its original form is still maintained. The tower is still maintained its authenticity. Buru Mosque has a 21-meter tower with a diameter of 4 meters. The tower still stands strong on the right side of the mosque. The main entrance door can be looked like an arch of 2.3 meters high with 1.30 meters wide. Well, listener, that's the end of Indonesian Wonder for today's edition entitled Haji Abdul Ghani Mosque. We will meet again in another interesting topic. Goodbye.
You've just listened to the third pop song, and for next segment, we'll present to you Miss Eleni. So stay tuned for your listener on Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia to the world.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listeners, Voice of Indonesia, welcome back to Miss Eleni. Today, we are going to inform you about raising the case of medical personnel exposed to COVID-19, ATB develops PPE disinfection unit. Stay tuned with us at www.voinews.id. Bandung Institute of Technology (ITB) team developed a device for disinfection of reusable personal protective equipment (PPE) and disposable PPE. This is motivated by a variety of cases of medical personnel infected with COVID-19 while on duty, even though they have been equipped with appropriate PPE and good usage procedures. The team analyzed that the possibility of exposure occurred because of PPE management, both when interacting with patients and when changing PPE. The team created a device that uses ozone gas as a disinfectant. Chief Researcher Sri Haryati Suhardi, PhD, said, "There are two types of tools that are used according to their uses. The first one is a disinfectant device that uses ozone mist to sterilize reusable PPE after use, such as hazard clothes, face shield, and safety glasses. Whereas the second tool uses ozone gas for disposable PPE, for example, mask and glove, before disposal. Both become effective tools because they can kill the virus within 7 or 10 seconds, according to studies in disinfection of microorganisms." In its use, PPE is only stored in tightly closed containers, and there is very little contact with medical personnel when doing the sterilization process. The consideration for the selection of ozone because it is safe for humans does not leave residues and will be transformed back into oxygen. Now, the tool is already in the prototype stage and ready to be launched for mass production. It is hoped that this PPE cleaning and sterilization container device will become an alternative solution to solve the problem of protecting medical personnel and hospital management. That was Miss Eleni for today. Thanks for listening.
berubah, hanya kamu di hatiku selamanya. Aku sangat mencintaimu, ku kan setia untukmu, selalu menjaga. Sakit hatimu kan ku obati, sedih dan senangku bersamamu. Setiap langkahku mencintaimu. Walau apapun yang menghalangi, sayangku takkan pernah berubah, hanya kamu di hatiku selamanya. Aku sangat mencintaimu, ku kan setia untukmu, selalu menjaga.
Are still with us, Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world at frequency shortwave 3325 kHz and website www.vianews.id. Listener, next segment would like to give you information about music. For today's edition, we'll present traditional music, so stay tuned, voice listener.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listeners, in today's edition, we would like to play a regional song from Lampung entitled Tanah Lado, to be sung by Andy Ahmad. Tanah Lado is one of the regional songs from Lampung, which is often sung in various events such as a wedding party and many others. The song tells about the past glory of Lampung and the wealth of its cultures and languages. It was composed by Fat Syahbudin and popularized by Andy Ahmad. The song tells about black paper as the main product of Lampung until it is immortalized on the symbol of Sang Bumi Ruwa Jurai. Listeners, here is Andy Ahmad with the song entitled Tanah Lado. Enjoy the song.
Thank you. japalas munggah di bengkunan gunung rimba tiup matang pulau-pulau di laut lepas tanaman kulawi panjawa.